Good morning. Welcome into In Focus on News Radio KMAN. Typically, the first or the second Thursday of each month, we discuss Fort Riley happenings and what's going on the post. And today we have a very special guest joining us, outgoing garrison commander with the U.S. Army, Colonel Stephen Schrader joins us. Colonel, it's a pleasure to talk with you this morning.
Hey, thanks, Brandon. I appreciate your time. It's always a pleasure to get on the radio with KMAN and see how you guys are doing and talk about Fort Riley and the region. So my name's Colonel Steve Schrader, and I'm a Big Red One soldier, and I've had the privilege of being the garrison commander at Fort Riley for the last 2 years. And got about a week and a half to go, and I'll have to transition that off to the next guy.
Yeah, that's a kind of a neat little thing here, and I know it's bittersweet, I know, for a lot of you, but something that's just kind of a process that goes on in the U.S. Army. Been a busy 2 years, and you may have the most eventful term as the garrison commander at Fort Riley, at least of late. I know COVID-19's impacted a lot of things. Bring us up to date on how Fort Riley's continuing to protect the force, prevent the spread, and preserve readiness.
Well, you hit the nail on the head there, Brandon, with the three P's. You know, the community's tracking, and we've been focused on ever since the COVID-19 pandemic outbreak of the three P's, you know, our ability to protect the force, soldiers, families, and civilians on the installation, prevent the spread of COVID-19, and then preserve readiness, because we still have a responsibility to provide trained and ready forces to answer our nation's call. And that's where we've centered our efforts across the installation and with the 1st Infantry Division, Big Red One. You know, since early March, you know, it's hard to believe it's been since then that we've been focused on the virus. You know, and we continually assess and maintain a close eye on the region and what's going on the installation and off the installation. And as we've watched over the last few weeks, we've seen infection rates, you know, increase, not just, you know, regionally, but across the United States as various states have changed their policies and opened up and became less restrictive and, you know, trying to get the economy fired back up. But that had a secondary effect of, you know, increased case rates. And so, you know, we've increased some of our own protective measures and preventative measures on the installation in order to continue to prevent the spread of the virus. You know, all Fort Riley-based service members now are required to wear a face mask in a public facility, both on and off the installation. You know, we put that in effect over a week ago as a result of the increasing case rate. And that applies even if you're outdoors. You know, so if you're an active duty service member and you walk outdoors and you can't maintain 6-foot physical distancing from other people, then you should be wearing a face mask. And it applies when we drive off the installation. So if I get in my car, drive off of Fort Riley, go to Junction City, Walmart, or go to the Walmart in Manhattan, or pick your place of business that a soldier or family member may patron, we have to wear a face mask. And, you know, that went in their general order update from the senior commander, Major General Kolaszewski, commanding general of the Big Red One, last week. And so we were abiding by that. You know, I was in Walmart over the weekend in Junction City, and I stepped out of the truck, put my face mask on, and I'm still wearing my OCP camouflage face mask when I was in civilian clothes. I want service members, I want soldiers and family members to see, you know, I'm the garrison commander, so my face is all over the installation. But when I'm out in the public, people recognize me, and I want them to see that I'm still wearing a face mask and leading by example. And so it's easy to spot when you've got an OCP face mask on. But we're doing that to help prevent the spread. We've also, you know, restricted some areas in Manhattan, specifically Aggieville. We boundaried that based off of that becoming a designated area of outbreak over the last couple of weeks based off some case increases there. It's our effort to make sure that we don't have folks visiting the place and bringing it back into the installation. And we've got all of our additional measures that are still in existence on Fort Riley that we've been putting in place over the last several weeks since the virus outbreak kicked off. Hand wash stations, hand sanitation stations, are limiting the patron limits on some of our facilities like commissary, the PX, our shopettes, you know, limiting the number of entrances that we have to buildings, especially headquarters, motor pools, COFs. You know, those are all preventive measures that have proven to prevent the spread of the virus, and we're continuing to implement those.
I might just ask you just a question off the mask thing here. Has that presented any challenges within, like, workout facilities and such? Because I would think that maybe be a little bit of a challenge there.
So we do have, you wear the face mask when you go into our physical fitness centers. Use Whitside and King Field House as an example. Whitside's there on Jupiter Road as soon as you come into the installation from the Ogden side. And then King Field House is down on Historic Main Post. And so when you enter those facilities and you're doing a normal workout, you have to wear your face mask unless you're doing cardio. If you're on a elliptical or a treadmill or something of that nature, then you could pull the face mask off. But we've gone through those facilities and actually physically distanced machines or put some equipment off limits so that a person that's on one treadmill is not standing directly beside another person that's on another treadmill. And so we've separated those. And in many cases, we've taken those extra machines that we've blocked off and moved them to another facility so that we can still maintain their use, but achieve physical distancing inside of those areas.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate clearing that up. That's something that I've been thinking about. Like, that would be really, really hard if you had to do cardio with a mask on.
Yeah, it's not fun cardioing with a mask. I tried it on the elliptical the other day for about 20, 30 minutes, and it'll work you out real good.
I'll bet. Well, specifically, what are the policies for visitors that are wanting to come on post?
So we've got our gates. Some of our gates we've opened up back to normal operations. You know, we're doing some road construction on the installation on Henry Drive, and so we've got Trooper is back open, running 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we reinstituted our Trusted Traveler program on the 28th of June. But that Trusted Traveler program only applies to folks that are traveling from inside the 150-mile radius. And so we've established a 150-mile local travel radius on the installation. That used to be 70 miles when we were at the peak of COVID move restrictions. And we have broadened that out to 150. So if you're inside of that 150-mile radius, you can get on the installation via Trusted Traveler, but you're still going to be asked screening questions in order to access the installation. You still got to have a valid ID card, and you still got to have that Trusted Traveler who has a DOD ID card that's sponsoring you onto the installation. You know, and for contractors and other folks that are coming in the installation to do mission essential work, they're having to gain access through 12th Street, which is our commercial access gate, and they're getting screening questions. You know, have you been in contact with a COVID-19 positive individual? Have you traveled outside of the local radius? You know, do you have any flu-like symptoms? And we're also doing temperature checks at those locations in order to make sure that the folks that are gaining access to the installation for mission essential capacity are doing so. They don't have symptoms and potentially aren't transmitting the virus inadvertently. You know, we do have provisions in place for, you know, service members who may have a soldier deployed and they need to have a family member come in from an out-of-state location to help take care of children or take care of a potential PCS move. And we've got O5 Lieutenant Colonel level commanders that can approve a memorandum that says this family member's coming in to help take care of a hardship issue to gain access to the installation. But, you know, from a sightseeing, just to come look at Fort Riley because I want to go sightseeing perspective, we're not there yet based off of the level of transmission rates that we're seeing across the country.
What has been the biggest challenges for the Army and you as the garrison commander facing this coronavirus?
So, you know, challenges are something we deal with on a day-to-day basis, and it's all about rolling your sleeves up and putting good hard work and thought process into place on it. You know, really for COVID, it's, you know, as we early on started being restricted across the nation, the DOD put stop move process in place. You know, the number one challenge is how do we continue to train? How can we continue to provide trained and ready forces to answer our nation's call, even though we can't get the same workforce, same capacity in because of some of the move restrictions? And so making sure that we have identified the specific mission essential services that we continue to provide, the mission essential training requirements that we need to provide in order to answer the nation's call. You know, that takes some creativity and some mitigation measures in order to execute that. And so that's where the three P's generated from, our ability to protect the force. We want to be able to protect their ability to continue to do their mission essential capacity, prevent the spread of the virus, which helps us preserve mission essential readiness. And so a lot of those mitigation measures that I talked about at the beginning of the conversation are the exact things that gave us the flexibility to overcome those challenges of, you know, how do you bring people to work? You know, how do you provide childcare when you know, you're talking about a virus that's easily transmitted, and you've got kids in a room, and you've got caregivers, you've got parents, and so we compartmentalized and made sure that only specific folks were providing care to children in our child development center, so that if we did have a potential outbreak or a potential positive case in there, we didn't expose the entire facility. We only exposed a very, very, very small population, and we could close that room instead of closing the entire facility. You know, those are the kinds of challenges we had to think through, and those mitigation measures have helped us overcome that over the last several weeks. And you know, we've been communicating those successes with the local community on a consistent basis, so that, you know, the entire region has, you know, some of the TTPs and success that we have as an example for how they're getting after things in, say, you know, Riley or Manhattan or you know, pick a county surrounding Fort Riley, Pottawatomie, pick your pick, we're talking to everybody. But sharing that information is all part of it, because we're all in this fight together.